It is Monday, December 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. In the next half hour, we'll hear from an international sport lawyer about why International Soccer Federation FIFA has just banned its chief from football for 8 years. We'll also ask a Middle East analyst about the significance of an attack in Syria that killed a Hezbollah militant leader. And we'll review the new Star Wars movie with our very own film critic, Penelope Pulu. It's all ahead on International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Thanks for joining us. FIFA President Sepp Blatter and European soccer boss Michel Platini have both been banned from soccer for 8 years for ethics violations, leaving the global game leaderless as it struggles with a swirl of corruption cases. Earlier, I spoke to international sport lawyer David Larkin, who's based here in Washington, and I asked him about a payment that FIFA made to Platini, a $2 million payment, in 2011, and why FIFA's ethics committee decided that that payment constitutes a conflict of interest.
Well, what you have is the allegation is that basically this is a payment that was never recorded in FIFA's account. And so the head of audit compliance, Domenico Scala, said that it really, the question was whether this was a falsification of the financial matters at FIFA, because basically you had two executive committee members aware of a $2 million liability, and yet that was allegedly never recorded in FIFA's account. If that's the case, then Mr. Scala raised a very valid point as to whether this is a falsification of the accounts.
Why should fans of international soccer be concerned about that kind of financial arrangement?
Well, because you have, any time you're having a payment that's paid 9 years later, that's a red flag. That to date, we really haven't seen any evidence that it was recorded anywhere. That's another red flag. But I mean, this goes along the lines with everything else we've seen, that this is an organization with leaders who do not feel that they owe fans or football accountability for the financial transactions that they engage in. Whether the transaction was valid or invalid, what we have is a very suspicious circumstances surrounding 2 million Swiss francs paid 9 years after the obligation was incurred, and the only word we have from either of the people involved is an oral agreement. That should trouble anyone.
Well, we did hear Sepp Blatter tell the media that he's going to appeal this decision by the Ethics Committee to FIFA's Appeals Committee and maybe even the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Lausanne. What chances of success do you think he has?
Well, I think at the Appeal Committee, I don't see anything really changing with the FIFA Appeal Committee. At CAF, I think that there is a chance that this may be overturned or
and,
not, depending on the evidence.
By CAS, you mean the Court of Arbitration for Sport?
Yes. But the problem is that the Court of Arbitration for Sport is an entity that has a lot of conflicts of interest, in my opinion. And so it's not like we have a real independent review. These are people in sport reviewing matters. And I got to be honest, as an attorney, there are clearly systemic problems with that organization, as outlined in the recent Pechstein decision by the German court. So, the idea that we have this independent sport justice system that works well or efficiently is false. There's a lot of problems to it, and so I think there's a lot of room for this to run going forward in the future.
All right. Thank you very much to David Larkin. He is an international attorney focusing on sport law based here in Washington. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Well, for more on the FIFA scandal, we're going to turn now to Olin Akosholu, who's with me here in the studio, for a look at social media reaction. Olin, what have you got?
Hi, Michael. Well, the news spread pretty fast on social media, and hashtag FIFA became the top worldwide trend on Twitter earlier this morning. Twitter users have been sharing and reacting to the video of Sepp Blatter responding to FIFA's 8-year ban in a press conference, and a lot of people are also curious about the piece of plaster Sepp Blatter had on his cheek during the press conference.
I did see that too.
Yes, well, it turns out Nelly made a music video back in the early 2000s where he wore a similar piece of plaster on his cheek, so a lot of people are making jokes comparing the two. And of course, everybody wants to know who is next in line to run FIFA. Rio Ferdinand, a former professional English footballer, tweeted, "Who is going to run hashtag FIFA now? These two have been put to sleep in football." And meanwhile, Sepp Blatter's Twitter account has been silent. It has more than 2.5 million followers, but he hasn't tweeted anything since early October.
I wonder why that is. Well, what else is trending right now, Olin?
A big story that started trending last night. Steve Harvey was hosting the 64th Miss Universe pageant, and when it came time to announce who won, he incorrectly declared Miss Columbia as the winner. Then, after a few minutes of Miss Columbia celebrating the win on live TV, he had to let the audience know that he made a mistake. Miss Philippines was the real winner.
How cruel is that, huh?
It was awful. They had to take the crown and sash off Miss Columbia and then give it to Miss Philippines. It was pretty awkward, to say the least. Then, to make things worse, he tweeted an apology after the show and misspelled Philippines. He later deleted the tweet, posted a corrected version of the apology. Hashtag Miss Universe 2015 has been trending this morning with people weighing in on the mix-up, calling it a ridiculous plot twist and also one of the most cringeworthy moments of 2015.
Wow. Well, thanks very much for that social media update this morning. Olin Akosholu with us in the studio. Thank you.
You bet, Michael.
This is VOA. One of the world's great cities, the gateway to America for generations. VOA brings you New York in 12 rarely seen views. Presenting the 2016 VOA calendar, a gift from us, free for the asking. Just send us your mailing address in an email to calendar@voanews.com, and you can have New York's beauty grace your wall all next year.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
I'm Michael Lippin, and you're listening to VOA's International Edition. Three rockets fired from Lebanon struck rural areas of northern Israel on Sunday, causing no casualties or damage. The rockets came hours after a leader of the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah was killed in an airstrike in the Syrian capital Damascus. Israel responded to the rockets with artillery fire into southern Lebanon. Arab media widely believe that Israel carried out the airstrike that killed the Hezbollah commander Samir Kantar, who served almost 30 years in an Israeli prison for the killing of three Israelis, including a 4-year-old girl, in 1979. Regional analyst Joseph Olmert of the University of South Carolina told my colleague Victor Beatty that Hezbollah may not be as upset about the loss of Kantar as some people think.
I don't think it means too much to Hezbollah. I think that Hezbollah renounced him, and in the last few months there were many reports that the cooperation between him and Hezbollah was not as good or as solid as it used to be before. And the reason for that is that, according to press reports in the Arabic press in the last 24 hours, but also before, he became a nuisance to both the Hezbollah and the Syrians because he was so eager to create troubles along the border between Israel and Syria and the Golanites in a way that could have compromised the higher interest of both Hezbollah and the Syrians.
Is this going to drag Israel deeper into the Syrian conflict?
There are attempts all the time to drag Israel into the Syrian conflict, but it doesn't really happen. Look, the Israeli interest in the Syrian conflict is to see that border between Israel and Syria that used to be so peaceful would not become a zone of conflict.
Joseph, three Katyusha rockets reportedly fired from Lebanon that struck open areas in northern Israel, causing no damage. Can we expect any kind of retaliation?
Well, there was an immediate retaliation, but Hezbollah will have to be very, very careful, or any other faction in South Lebanon, not to trigger an Israeli retaliation, because I think that there are those in Israel who would like to retaliate. I would not like to be on the other side of the border when this retaliation happens. But look, as of now, the situation is, as they call it, over there, tense. And it really is the case that Hezbollah in this time would not like to get into a confrontation with Israel. Even if there are some hot-headed people in Israel that would like to see a confrontation with Hezbollah, I do not believe that the political leadership under Prime Minister Netanyahu would like to see it happening. So my reading, therefore, of the situation, to give you the bottom line of it, would be that there will be a lot of cyber rattling, or at least talks, but the situation will not get out of control. But I might be wrong. Look, you talk here about all kinds of factions that exist along the border on the Lebanese side of it, which may be composed of very few people that may not feel any responsibility to any such considerations and would like to trigger problems. You know, when you have so much tension around, every little something can be the big one. But altogether, my assessment at this point in time is that that should not necessarily happen, or that it is not inevitable.
That was Joseph Olmert of the University of South Carolina speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. U.S. President Barack Obama has expressed confidence that a U.S.-led coalition opposing the Islamic State militant group will prevail. In an interview with NPR News released on Monday, Obama called the Islamic State a virulent, nasty organization, but he stressed that the worst damage the militants could do to the United States is if people change their way of life and values.
It is also important for us to keep things in perspective. And this is not an organization that can destroy the United States. This is not a huge industrial power that can pose great risks to us institutionally or in a systematic way. But they can hurt us, and they can hurt our people and our families. And so I understand why people are worried.
Well, more than a year ago, President Obama authorized the beginning of the U.S.-led air campaign in Iraq and Syria aimed at destroying the IS militant group. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
An international team of researchers has found that climate change could worsen if large fruit-eating animals living in tropical forests should become extinct. After eating its fruit, the animals are known to scatter the seeds of large tree species in their waste material. The researchers say birds and large mammals are responsible for almost all dispersal of the seeds for large plants such as trees. These trees help counter climate change by capturing and storing a good amount of carbon dioxide before it has a chance to escape into the atmosphere. So, if the large animals are taken from an ecosystem, the researchers say it could lead to a loss in hardwood trees, which means more CO2, a primary greenhouse gas, winds up in the atmosphere. According to the researchers, a number of large animal species are currently being threatened by issues such as hunting, illegal trade, and habitat loss. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America with me, Michael Lippin. Well, Washington is ending the year free of fiscal drama that so often has plagued the city. Congress has adjourned until January, having funded the U.S. government through next September, and in a rare turn of events, with Democrats and Republicans singing each other's praises. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke earlier to VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman and asked Bowman to explain how this all happened.
Well, Jim, in the hours before Congress left town, and they always love to leave town at least a week before Christmas, but frequently aren't able to do so because one or another thing has to be passed and they can't find agreement. Well, this time they were able to find agreement after months of negotiations on the contours of a spending bill. A bill emerged. It sailed through both houses of Congress, went to President Obama's desk. He signed it into law. And we had a rare outbreak of genuine bipartisanship to the point where Mitch McConnell got up at a press conference and named various Democratic senators that he wanted to thank for having allowed the moment to materialize. And it was a feel-good moment on a chunk of real estate, Capitol Hill, where feel-good moments are relatively rare these days.
Especially with a Republican-led Congress and a Democrat in the White House, you don't often get a lot of agreement.
Indeed. And it actually went beyond the budget agreement. There was an agreement to reauthorize the Export-Import Bank, which had been suspended for a number of months amid Congress's inability to address that. Congress was able to agree on a transportation bill. This is something that no one could have predicted months ago. The thinking was that heading into an election year, that heads would butt, that disagreement would prevail. But in fact, cooler heads seem to have prevailed. And there seemed to have been a genuine desire on the part of Republicans who control both houses of Congress not to have any train wrecks with their fingerprints on it. Ahead of the election.
Very important in an election year, as we found out in the last go-around, because there was quite a bit of bickering on the Hill, and Republicans came out looking pretty bad.
They did, although it's been pointed out that the last time that there was a big shutdown, yes, Republicans were blamed, but in the following year, the American public turned around and voted them an even bigger majority in Congress than they'd had previously. So in terms of consequences, yes, there was a momentary dip in the polls for them. And perhaps most damning for Republicans was that they were blamed for this just at the time that the Affordable Care Act's horrible, no good online rollout was this just incredible train wreck. Were it not for this government shutdown, all eyes would have been focused on Obamacare and the really awful rollout that it has.
And a lot of this bipartisanship cooperation really points to Speaker of the House Paul Ryan. There were some rumblings of a potential shutdown, and he pretty much shut that down, at least on the House side.
The message from Republicans seems to be to their members, look, we can't have any train wrecks. Let's not do anything that would poison our chances of retaining our majorities in Congress and perhaps capturing the White House, because that is the real eye on the prize. Republicans know that if a Republican is elected president, that their task in terms of getting legislation through will be much easier.
Well, no worries about a shutdown when it comes to great analysis from Capitol Hill. Michael Bowman covers the Senate for VOA. Mike, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
And that was our Senate correspondent, Michael Bowman, speaking to International Edition's Jim Stevenson. Well, now for a look at the entertainment world, and today we're talking about the new Star Wars movie. Here's International Edition's Ira Melman and VOA's Penelope Pulu.
You must recognize that music. It is the theme from Star Wars, and unless you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, you know that the newest Star Wars has just come out, at least in the United States and parts of Europe, and it's getting rave reviews. VOA's Penelope Pulu has seen the movie and also covered the throngs of people who are going out to see it. What'd you think of the movie, Penelope?
Thumbs up, Ira. It is a great film. I think it is a great continuation to the original ones. Nobody's going to be disappointed.
Why? I mean, what does it have that some of the others didn't?
First of all, it has the technology. We are seeing this on IMAX, 3D. The space battles are larger, bigger than ever. So you're going to enjoy that part. The script is wonderful, the story. It's a fairy tale of good versus evil. The new cast is unbelievable. I think that whoever did the casting did a masterful job, knowing that this is a billion-dollar venture and we cannot mess this up. And these new young people are playing next to the iconic characters, so that's not a small feat either.
That makes it very special as well, doesn't it?
Yes.
J.J. Abrams, what do you think he lent to this?
First of all, his enthusiasm as a fan. You can tell that this is a kid in a toy store. He
By the way, we should say that J.J. Abrams is the director of this latest movie.
Absolutely. He's the filmmaker. He loves the franchise. He grew up with that. And he brings all this enthusiasm in him, but he also tries to stay true to the actual story of George Lucas. But he also brings in his new story, with the new people applying to the young generation sensibilities.
Now, you also covered, as I said, the throngs of people going to see the movie. You saw were outside one of the Smithsonian IMAX movie theaters. What is all this frenzy about?
Okay, this was very special, I have to say, because I wasn't exactly outside. I was actually inside the theater under the gaze of all these space shuttles and all this aviation history. And to have all these people dressed up as their favorite characters, talking about the battles and the TIE fighters and the sabers. And then the director of the Smithsonian Movie Theaters was there raving about this IMAX technology, bringing in all these very stark black hues and colors onto the screen. So you have this depth of the galaxies 10 times stronger, tenfold, to the original one. So it was really special to see that enthusiasm, that energy.
How unique is it that so many people are still nerdy fans of the Star Wars movies? It's been a while. It's been a long time since the first one came out. I was much younger than I am right now. And why has it lasted so long? What is it about the Star Wars franchise that keeps people glued to it?
It's the fairy tale. It is this collective myth that people have decided somehow to adopt and to accept into their hearts. And a lot of people are going to come and tell you their personal stories, how they grew up as children of a divorced family or with adversities at school or whatever, and how each one of these heroes somehow spoke to them, be that the heroes of the good or the anti-hero who brought in the dark force and the power. But a lot of people felt empowered by that collective tale and still are. A lot of younger kids continue the myth because they grew up with that, because their parents loved it. So, you know what I like? That humanity finds its voice and it is collective brotherhood through popular culture. And that to me, in a dark world like we live today, it is incredibly special.
And I'm going to wait in line and go see it today. Thank you so much, Penelope Pulo. Greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome, Ira. Thank you.
I still have to see that movie. You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. Your director today was Patrice Martin. The engineer was Nashwan Kali. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. Have a great week.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Even as the world marks the 67th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, China continues to crack down on rights defenders and others who seek to peacefully question official policy and contribute to the public discourse on China's future. Since July, the Chinese government has detained nearly 300 lawyers and activists. The United States has called for the release of more than 20 such people who remain in custody, as well as Ilham Tati, Ken Pokartsi, Zhong Kai, Gao Yu, and Liu Xiaobo. Rights lawyer Pu Jicheng, who was arrested following his participation in a private meeting to peacefully mark the 25th anniversary of the violent suppression of the Tiananmen Square protests, is currently on trial. He stands accused of making criminal comments online, inciting ethnic hatred, and picking quarrels and provoking troubles. Pu Jicheng has been detained since May 2014. The United States mission to the United Nations recently expressed concern with China's national security law, noting that it codifies an expansive and vague definition of national security that invites arbitrary and situational interpretation by security forces. In addition, the United States is also concerned that the government's draft foreign non-governmental management law would unreasonably constrict civil society and undermine people-to-people exchange. It is incumbent on China to uphold the rights enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Marking the 67th anniversary of this important document on December 10th, President Barack Obama said, "We will continue to lift up the lives of all who yearn to exercise their inherent human rights and to shine a light on those still living in the darkest pockets of our world."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.